Welcome to Family Law Talk, presented by Kirk Stange of Stange Law Firm, PC. Stange Law Firm is a family law firm in the St. Louis metro area, with offices in Missouri and Illinois. Now, here's your host, Kirk Stange.
Welcome to Family Law Talk. My name is Kirk Stange, and I am one of the managing partners of Stange Law Firm, which is a family law firm with multiple offices in Missouri and in Illinois. Well, welcome today to Family Law Talk with Stange Law Firm. Today's topic is a very interesting one that has hit the news quite a bit. And the title of today's episode is, What Are the Rights of Sperm Donors? And this is based on an article on our blog, stofathersrights.com. dated May 17, 2014, and the title of the article is Actor's Custody Dispute Continues with Appellate Win. And then if you look below today's episode, where we have the description of the episode, if you're listening to this from Blog Talk Radio itself, there's a webpage you can actually go to get more information on this topic, and the website is standupforgus.com. So very interesting topic. We'll get into it in just a minute, but I will state, as I always do, that the choice of a lawyer is an important decision that should not be based solely upon advertisements, and that the information you obtain today in the episode is general in nature, and it may not apply to specific factual or legal circumstance. Therefore, if you require legal advice, you should definitely consult an attorney who's licensed and competent to practice law in your specific jurisdiction. And I would say that's particularly true in today's episode as well, where you're dealing with some unique aspects based on how the law is worded in various different states. So let's get into the topic itself. Again, it's a very interesting one. I think with advancing medical technology and advances in terms of the ability of couples to get pregnant outside of sexual intercourse through medical procedures, I think this article and this topic is particularly important because realistically, this could become a situation for a Missouri couple, for example, or an Illinois couple. And so that's why I wanted to spend some time talking about this topic today, because I think it's really relevant, and it might be a situation that could really culminate in some kind of case in Missouri and Illinois at some point. But here's the deal. In essence, there's an actor by the name of Jason Patrick, pretty popular actor. Apparently, his grandfather is Jackie Gleason, is what I read online at least. So we're talking a pretty popular actor, a guy that's been around for a long time. And this case involves him, and he's been all throughout the news promoting really this topic, and he's been on a lot of TV shows. He's got a webpage, as I indicated, standupforgus.com. And if you go to that webpage, you'll see he's got a lot of support from Hollywood celebrities on this topic as well. So I think in light of that and in light of the fact that medical technology is really increasing, I thought this would be a good topic for Family Law Talk with Stange Law Firm today. But let's kind of go through the facts, at least in terms of how it's reported. There's actually a reported California decision that came out on this case, a California Court of Appeals decision. I'm going to go through what they reported and just from reading the opinion, what it appears they did. But what I'm more interested in, since I'm a Missouri and Illinois attorney, is asking the question, which is what would happen in Missouri and what would happen in Illinois under the same fact pattern. So not so interested in terms of what California did in that, I mean, I'm not a California attorney. I'm not licensed to practice there, so I'm certainly not giving legal advice to California residents. But I want to take this fact pattern, which we'll go through, and we'll discuss what it appears the California court did. But I want to ask a question. If this fact pattern or a similar fact pattern happened in Missouri, what would happen? Because realistically, that could ultimately be the case. So let's talk about this. Apparently, Jason Patrick is in a relationship or was in a relationship with a lady for a long period of time. They were never married. According to the facts of this Court of Appeals case, which you could actually probably Google if you wanted to read it online, it's Jason P. versus Daniel S., and it's in the Court of Appeals of the State of California for the Second Appellate District, and this is Division 4, and it looks like the case number is B28629. So you could Google this and probably read this for yourself, but apparently Jason and Danielle cohabitated for many years, but they never married. they tried to get pregnant for really a substantial period of time. And according to the opinion, Daniel tried to have a baby naturally beginning in 2006. And then although she became pregnant in December 2006, apparently the pregnancy was not viable after six and a half weeks. And then in 2007, Danielle had two intrauterine insemination procedures using Jason's sperm, but neither resulted in pregnancy. And then in October of 2007, after being advised that their inability to have a child at this point was due to apparently Jason's sperm count, Jason had a surgical procedure to address the problem. And then she and Jason began to look into having an IVF procedure in order to get Danielle pregnant. So then after that takes place in May of 2008, Danielle moved out of Jason's home and bought a home nearby. In other words, apparently these two split in some capacity. The following month, Danielle purchased sperm of an anonymous donor from a sperm bank and told Jason she was going to pursue motherhood as a single mother. And then at some point in the fall of 2008, she looked at a website for single mothers by choice to learn about her rights. And she apparently learned in looking there that a man who gives his sperm for artificial insemination is never treated in the law as the father. And then so from there, in September 2008, she actually moves back into the home with Jason while the house she bought was being remodeled. And then in November of 2008 or January 2009, Jason gave Danielle a letter in which he wrote that he was not ready to be a father, but if Danielle wanted to use his sperm to conceive, she had his blessing as long as she did not tell others. And again, this is just all according to the Court of Appeals decision. So Danielle agrees, uses Jason's sperm rather than the anonymous sperm donor sperm she had purchased, and ultimately became pregnant. Apparently, Jason signed a series of consent forms provided by the place called California Fertility Partners, which is what it appears like. It looks as if that's where the IVF procedure took place. And so a child was ultimately born, a boy named Gus. And according to the case, Jason presented evidence regarding his relationship with Gus and Danielle over the next 2.5 years. For example, he presented evidence that Daniel referred to Jason as Dada when speaking to Gus, and that Gus called Jason Dada. And it appears that there's lots of other evidence out there to show that there was a father-son relationship here. So when Jason was working in New York for 6 months, Danielle and Gus flew there several times and stayed with Jason in his apartment. And then when Danielle and Gus were not in New York with Jason, Jason communicated with Gus over the internet by Skype and continued to maintain a long-term relationship into the middle of 2012, when apparently the relationship between Jason and Danwell went south. And then at that point, at least according to the opinion, it appears as if Jason was really denied contact from that point forward, which then culminated into litigation between the two of them over custody of Gus. And then ultimately the argument that was raised by Danielle was this, which I think is shocking to a lot of people, but to a family law attorney, and if you look at the statutes, actually somewhat predictable argument. And the argument that she made was, in essence, if you look at the California statute itself, that a man who donates his sperm is not treated as the father if he's not married to the woman at the time. And so that was, in essence, the argument of Danielle in the case, that Jason had no rights because he donated his sperm and he did it through a licensed physician and he wasn't married to her at the time. And so, in essence, she claimed that he wasn't the father, he wasn't the presumed father under California law, and he should be booted off the case and not have a right to pursue custody of Gus. And at the trial court, that ultimately worked. And so then this case goes up on appeal, and then, you know, Mr. Patrick, I mean, during this process is, you know, pretty visible out there, as I indicated. He's got the webpage, and I've seen him on multiple TV shows on this topic, and this case goes up on appeal. And then recently, May 14th, 2014, the Court of Appeals in California, if you read the opinion, reversed the decision of the trial court, and they did it based on specific California law that's cited in the opinion. And that's what I think is kind of interesting here. If you look at what the case talks about, is it indicates that a presumed father would be, it gives several specific things that a man would have to prove to prove that he was a presumed father. One of which is a presumed parent, the mother are or have been married, and the child is born during the marriage or within 300 days after the marriage. Or two, the presumed parent and the mother have attempted to marry before the child's birth, but the marriage was declared invalid. Or three, the presumed parent and mother married or attempted to marry after the child's birth, and the presumed parent, with his or her consent, is named on the child's birth certificate, or the presumed parent is obligated to support the child under a written agreement. Or four, the presumed parent receives a child into his or her home and openly holds out the child as his natural child. Or five, the child was conceived after the death of the presumed parent under the conditions set forth in the probate code. And so, in other words, if you read this case, for Mr. Patrick to succeed, he had to prove one of these exceptions applied that in essence made him a presumed father. The trial court said none of these applied. He wasn't even entitled to hearing. What the Court of Appeals said is they looked at number four, which is the presumed parent receives a child into his or her home and openly holds out the child as his or her natural child. And so the reversal reversed to have a hearing to determine whether or not Mr. Patrick did take this child into his or her home and openly hold out the child as his or her natural child. And so that's, when it goes back to the trial court, that presumably is going to be the issue before the trial court. And so you take what happened there, then you look at the Missouri statutes, and I think it is very, very interesting when you look at the Missouri statutes. And that's why I say, and same with Illinois statutes, you have a real question about what would happen under a similar fact pattern in Missouri and Illinois. So let's think about this. A lot of folks these days live together. They don't get married. A lot of folks have kids unmarried. 40% of kids are born out of wedlock in the United States today. And obviously, you know, a lot of children born naturally, so that, you know, you don't have IVF procedures or you don't have medical personnel involved in order to impregnate the mom. But in some instances, you just have to conceive that's got to be happening. There's got to be couples who live together who aren't married that can't get pregnant, just like the facts of this case. So they go see a doctor. The husband donates sperm, and then the mom gets pregnant, and you just have to wonder, like I said, whether this fact pattern will play itself out in the Missouri and Illinois courts, and then you have to wonder what would the Missouri or Illinois courts do under Missouri and Illinois law with the same fact pattern. So let's explore that here for a moment, because that's kind of the bulk of the topic I wanted to get here today. Interestingly, if you look at Missouri and Illinois law, they both have statutes that appear to be similar to the California law. In other words, in terms of sperm donors, if you look at RSMO 210-824-2, it states the donor of semen provided to a licensed physician for use in artificial insemination of a married woman other than the donor's wife is treated in law as if he were not the natural father of a child thereby conceived. So if you're living with a girlfriend, for example, and you can't get pregnant naturally and you donate sperm to impregnate your girlfriend, under Missouri law, if you look at this statute, if you do it and you do it through a licensed physician under 210-824-2, you're not to be treated as the natural father of the child conceived. So again, that's similar to what the California statute is. And then if you look in Illinois, 750 ILCS 40/3, it in essence says the same thing. Under subsection B, it says a donor of semen provided to a licensed physician for use in artificial insemination of a woman other than the donor's wife shall be treated in law as if he were not the natural father of a child thereby conceived. So Illinois law, the same thing. under the statute, if you're living with your girlfriend, you donate sperm to impregnate her, under the statute, you're not to be treated as the natural father of the child if you're not married to her at the time. I mean, I think that's interesting. I think that's, like, shocking to a lot of people. A lot of people probably have never really contemplated that reality if they are having kids with somebody through through a licensed physician because they can't get pregnant naturally. Probably never considered this idea. And obviously, in a lot of instances, the mom might not raise the argument that Danielle raised in this case with Jason Patrick. In a lot of these cases, the mom might consent to the dad, you know, having custody and visitation time with the child. But if a situation ever arises where a mom takes the same position as Danielle did in this case with Jason Patrick, it's potentially problematic and potentially could result in some pretty rigorous litigation in the state of Missouri, the state of Illinois. The interesting thing I will state, and I think this is the other big problem piece, is under the California statute cited in this case, they create five bases for which an individual could be deemed a presumed father under the statute. And you know, the one basis that ultimately carried the day in this California Court of Appeals case was the subsection that said the presumed parent receives a child into his or her home and openly holds out the child as his or her natural parent. That is not in Missouri or the Illinois statutes, as far as I can tell. I've got these statutes in front of me, and I'm reading through them, but 210.822, RSMO 210.822 is a Missouri statute, and they give four ways that a man is presumed to be the natural father of a child. One is he and the child's natural mother are or have been married to each other, and the child is born during the marriage or within 300 days after the marriage is terminated by death, annulment, declaration of invalidity or dissolution or degree of separation is entered by a court. So again, married, if you're married at the time the child's born, you're the presumed father. Two, birth. Or before the child's birth, he and the natural mother have attempted to marry each other by a marriage solemnized in apparent compliance with the law, although the attempted marriage is or may be declared invalid. Then it gives a couple of subsections there. But again, you're talking about attempting to marry. So married, attempted to marry. Or three, after the child's birth, he and the child's natural mother have married or attempted to marry each other by a marriage solemnized in apparent compliance with the law, although the marriage is or may be declared invalid. So again, attempted to marry. And then four, an expert concludes that blood tests show that the alleged parent is not excluded and that the probability of paternity is 98% or higher using a probability of 0.5. And so obviously a sperm donor who donates sperm to child or to a mom in order to have a child, I mean, the paternity test is going to show them to be the dad. But on the other hand, you've got this other statute in Missouri, 210.824.2, which indicates a donor of sperm is not to be treated as a natural father of a child. So, I mean, I think under the Missouri courts, kind of a huge conflict between 210.824.2 and then 210.822.4. And if you're a sperm donor, I suppose you try to rely on subsection 4 to indicate that there's a 98% or higher chance that you're the father. But on the other hand, a mom who might take the position of Danielle it could easily rely on this same statute, just as Danielle did in the California case, to state, look, sperm donor not to be treated as a natural father. And on top of it, unlike the case in California, bringing the child into his or her home and openly holding out the child as his or her natural child, that's not going to be good enough under Missouri law. And then if you look at Illinois, I mean, you're basically dealing with the same things, which is, again, sperm donor not to be treated as the natural father of a child. And again, you're dealing with the same things. And the statute 750 ILCS 45/5, and again, it's that the parents have married or they attempted to marry, that they've signed an acknowledgement of paternity. And those are the things that are discussed in the statute itself. But it's really problematic because I don't see the subsection that indicates that if a if a sperm donor takes a child into his or her home and openly holds out the child as his or her natural child, that that would be good enough. And so, listen, I think the moral here is, what are the rights of sperm donors, and specifically in Missouri and Illinois? And I think if you look at the statutes in Missouri and Illinois, you know, sperm donors who are married to their wife at the time that they donate the sperm, they're not going to have any issues under the Missouri or the Illinois statutes. But realistically speaking, if you're living with a girlfriend and you decide to donate sperm in order to impregnate your girlfriend, and then you later split up and you think that there's not potential problems here in terms of your custody rights to your child, I think you might be sadly mistaken. And look, the statutes probably don't contemplate the medical advances that have taken place. They probably don't contemplate the fact that, you know, more folks today are living together outside of marriage and in relationships than perhaps in the past. But the statute's the statute right now, and practically speaking, I think sperm donors, in terms of their rights, have specific hurdles and pitfalls that folks that you know don't have if they're married and they're a sperm donor. So I think it's a very interesting topic, and one that I really encourage the listeners to spend some more time researching, especially if you're a dad or you're a dad-to-be and you're considering donating sperm to somebody which you're not married to. You ought to kind of look at the law here specifically, because there's you know, some dangers out there. So in any case, that's the topic here today. I hope you all found it interesting. Again, as a follow-up to today's episode, you can go to stlfathersrights.com and you can read the article titled Actors Custody Dispute Continues with Appellate Win. And then again, you can check out the webpage that Jason Patrick set up titled StandUpForGus.com. Definitely an interesting topic. I hope you all enjoyed it. Stay tuned for our next exciting episode of Family Law Talk with Stange Law Firm. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Family Law Talk with Kirk Stange. Visit StangeLawFirm.com for more about today's topic, or to put Stange Law Firm to work for your family today.